Good morning, citizen lobbyist.
Good morning, Mike.
How you doing?
Oh, I'm doing good. I'm sitting in a room at the Captain Cook Hotel overlooking the beautiful city of Anchorage.
And does it look cold out there?
It does look cold, but I don't think it's cold as it is in the valley. I think I'm seeing about 6 below here.
Right, and we probably are up more in the neighborhood of 20 below. But all that will change. It'll get warmer, etc. Well, from your lofty view, then, let's talk about some things that are seeming to be happening both in the valley and of course, down in Juneau.
You want to talk about the school board meeting last night?
Well, I would like to, but I don't have all of the information. KT McKee streamed it. Did you listen to part of it?
I listened to the whole thing, Mike.
Ah, then let's go. You're in charge.
Well, let me just remedy that. I didn't tune in until after a couple things on the agenda, but pretty routine things, and information on it can be found at the district website. There was, it sounds like they had a full quorum and a full audience, despite the low temperatures last night. A couple of things that clearly brought them out. But the first thing they talked about was an update on ANCEPT and how ANCEPT was doing. You know, ANCEPT is a new program that they brought into Pathways.
Right, right. It's somewhat controversial in part because of utilization of that particular venue.
So, it was what they thought was it was, you know, about 30% of an underserved population, sort of the homeless, some economically disadvantaged, and English was their second language. So it sounds like they're doing pretty good with it. They had 115 applicants on track for an Algebra 1 in 8th grade. They had 54 selected to participate, and about 70% of them are Alaska Native and American Indian. So they feel like they've sort of hit their target, it looks like. I didn't hear the whole presentation, but again, as soon as we put it up on our website, Radio Free Palmer website, everybody can listen to it. But it sounds like it's a good program, that it's growing and it's on target for what it's supposed to be doing.
Good to hear.
Yeah. So the second one was another topic that we've heard a lot about, Mike, and that was the Matthew Middle College update. As people know, that Matthew Middle College has been a program that has been housed in the Eagle River campus of UAA, and it's a program that they describe as a benefit to students because they can actually go to high school, finish their high school, and also get college credit at the same time.
Right.
So there was a lot of talk at the very beginning. Why did it end up in Eagle River? Why didn't it end up on our campus? And not real sure about how that all worked out, but it has been housed in that campus, I want to say 3 years now, Mike. Does that sound about right? 3 or 4 years?
I think it's more like 4, but well, we can check that. But it's been there for a number of years now.
But they are now in the final draft format. They've agreed sort of without signing on the dotted line with the Matsu College. And so now that facility will move out of the Eagle River College and into the Matsu College. It'll be home, so a lot of students won't have to find their way to the Eagle River campus anymore.
Whoa. That saves a lot of driving, especially in weather like this.
Yeah, exactly. From the sounds of things, and there's a pretty good printout on the board documents from last night, but it sounds like they're saying that it's going to be cost neutral as far as what we were paying to use the Eagle River campus and what we were paying to use now the Matsu College campus. They weren't very firm about that, I will say. Left a little room there. They are pulling in 3 new portables, or not new portables, probably portables they've had, onto it to link the interior hallways and exterior decking so that they can have place for staff and also for kids that might want to be in the program, but they still need some help with some subjects till they get up to par to join the college classes.
Right.
They say they're about 95% design completion on that. That's the end of February. They expect staff occupancy by July, and so next fall, that'll be it. Enrollment has kind of been slow a little bit in coming. It was 47 kids when they opened it in 2012, Mike, and now This year they're up to 148, so it's a five-year growth, and they expect to be at 175 to 200. Again, that's quite a spread in what their expectations are for next year. So that's where it's at.
Great. Great to hear. I know many people have been hoping that that kind of thing would happen and would facilitate growth. And my understanding is the Anchorage School District is interested in continuing a similar version down in Anchorage.
Right, and they will benefit a lot because we, MAPSU, received quite a bit of money from the state legislature when there was money to do improvements on that campus to facilitate this program that Anchorage will benefit from. And as most people know, apparently they are in negotiation right now. Most people know that our ex-superintendent, Dina Paramo, is now the superintendent in Anchorage. She probably negotiated that contract to get in there in the beginning, so she will have a clear advantage, not only having a facility that's all there and ready, but also kind of knows what to pay for it. So it should be a great benefit to the Anchorage School District for sure. But also, I guess, you know, you could say a benefit to us because our kids aren't on that highway where there's a 30,000 other people, and maybe more kids will be able to participate in the program just because they won't have that barrier of transportation ahead of them. So that was that, and that good presentation on that program. So then they went right into a presentation by Luke Phelps, our business superintendent, about the budget, which was not very good news. It was well reported this week that the on this agenda was going to be something for the board to consider to do what they tried to do or did do at one point and then undid, and that was to privatize the services of both the custodians and, this time, in addition, nutrition services. So I think Mr. Phelps tried to lay out the reasoning why they were even looking at that. They took some assumption, as they normally do. They're assuming they'll get another increase of 3% in revenue from the MAPSU, or from the assembly, which may be a little optimistic depending upon whether the borough has the money and also or has the will to raise the mill rate to allow that. They still do not tax to the cap here at all. A lot of wriggle room for the assembly, but that takes some political willpower on their part to ask the residents, property owners, to pay a little bit more in taxes to cover it. And they've been struggling with their own budget, as we know, Mike.
Yep.
They also kind of assume that what they say local receipts maintains at zero increases and decreases. And I'm not quite sure what that means, other than maybe that property values don't go up or go down, which seems a little pessimistic because they seem to go up every year.
Right.
They're assuming that the state funding, their current BSA or their base student allotment, that program will be maintained for up until from now until 2020. And they're not anticipating any growth, which also seems a little pessimistic to me, too. They've continued to grow, and also in light of Neil Fried's projections saying that the economy, we're still gaining people, and he didn't seem to think that we would lose that many more. So it seemed like a little bit of a pessimistic view on what has normally been an optimistic view on getting students from the district.
Right.
And they also are assuming that federal funding is going to be maintained at zero increase or decrease. That's probably a pretty good bet. We just don't know what's going to happen with this administration there. So then they talked about the regular salary schedule movements that might happen, some of the negotiated agreements that are already there. They, of course, are getting ready to bargain with all of their bargaining units right now, so that's sort of probably setting the stage for that. They had a huge increase in their health insurance after three flat years of no increase from their health insurance, so they're now projecting this year won't go up quite as much as it did last year, but still another 6% increase, which will be split between employees and the district. And that's about in line of what I've heard. I've heard 6 to 7% in the normal private sector. And, you know, so they just kind of went through all of that and what that meant. It was a very comprehensive projection that he did, everything from operating funds to utilities. I mean, it was really down in the weeds there, Mike. But at the bottom line, they are running in quite a deficit, some $10 million. Now, they have some saved. They have sort of what some have referred to as their slush fund or their leftover money from years before that they've been building up. At one point, I think when I started watching the school board, Mike, they kept about less than $2 million in that. That's kind of a rainy day fund, which was
right.
Perilously low. They've built that up to some $28 million now. Maybe a little more than they need, but it'll go fast in these deficit years if they take $10 million out of it this year. So that's kind of set the stage for the next big thing. They talked about increasing class sizes, and they actually presented, and I encourage people to go to the website and download this on the school board website, that they talked about different scenarios that they put more kids in classes, whether they laid off teachers, whether they closed schools, even down to that point, how much it would save, and which took them to their other big thing on their agenda, and that was why they are talking about outsourcing custodial services and nutrition services. And this is a very, very preliminary talk. They have not put out, they're just kind of going along with making up the numbers, what they think the savings will be, because they really won't have hard numbers until they put out an RFP for it, or request for proposals. And so at this point, though, they are estimating a savings of between between $1 and $4 million, it sounds like, just for custodial services if they outsource.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah. But the estimate word is
122 employees and residents of,
sure,
would lose their jobs.
And I guess the word, I don't want to be too pessimistic. We've used that term here, but the word estimate is the thing that is always interesting to me, because when I say something sounds wonderful for savings, before we go and look at the cost, but they do cost, there's a cost associated with this, perhaps. That later on down the road, upon reflection, sometimes that doesn't turn out to be a savings.
Well, and history would prove that out, Mike, because this is a road they've gone down before. They outsourced the custodians. Oh, I don't even know what year that was, Mike. It's probably been about 8 years ago, maybe?
Yeah, it's eight feels about right.
Yeah, and it, Nana came in and took over the custodians. There was a lot of angst. There were a lot of problems. At the end of the day, they re-looked at it in a couple of years and decided that was a mistake, and they brought the custodians back into the family of employees. You know, it's about the employees make up about 84% of their expenses. It is a people business, and they really operate sort of on the edge of what they have for operating expenses. For instance, in there, we've built 5 new schools, and it was pointed out last night, I think by Member Rutherford, that we've built 5 new schools, and they haven't added one person to their operation and maintenance. Now, it could be argued they're new schools, we don't need a lot, but there's still preventative maintenance that has to happen in those schools so that we don't have a problem, we don't push a problem down the road.
Right.
And it's a lot of kinks to work out. So they've been overtaxed in that department, some would say the schools have already been overserved. So a lot of those little jobs, from my conversations with that department, have been taken up by the custodians. They've been able to step in because they know the schools. And been able to help a little bit with backfill on some of those needs because of the fact that we just don't have the personnel there. So that's, I think, what you're talking about, savings. And there was some testimony later when this was brought up, really actually some very good testifiers about, they couldn't believe that they were actually looking at this again because of the problems, people who had been through it before, there was even some testimony from the student advisory member on the board that says, you know, the custodian in my school when I went to Thielen, she's now in high school, was my best friend. I talked to her after work. She was kind of my counselor. I felt safe with her. She was really a member of our school family, and she would be very sad, she said, to see people like that leave.
Was a response to describing how this time it would be different?
Nope. I think it's fair to say the school district really has a lot of unknowns. This was the first step in getting the school board, and this was the first hearing to get the school board sort of acclimated to what the possibilities were and get the okay to go ahead and put out an RFP to get some hard numbers from them.
Okay.
Once you have the hard numbers, then you have the moral decisions to make. But it is sort of on a rapid schedule because the next school board meeting will be in 2 weeks. They could, at that time, make a decision. They could kick it down the road and ask for more information. But if they do, then I would imagine, there's talk of getting it back before them and making the transition as early as July of this year.
I guess that's still, for me, the essential question. If something of this sort has been tried and it did not work, what is the difference now? And along with that, there must have been something preliminarily that someone could see that would suggest this would be an advantage in the budget.
I think when they looked at other scenarios, and, I think they were, in all fairness to administration, I think they were really saying, we're looking for answers. We'd take any input on where we can find the money for this $10 million deficit that we have. They don't know what the legislature would be. And then they're also somewhat hamstrung with the same old thing, Mike, that we talk about every year, and that is they have to have, by law, by code, their budget submitted for next year way before they have the information they need. They don't know what they're getting from the borough when that date is on them. They don't know what they get from the state even after that. Even the borough doesn't know what they get the state when they do their budget. So there's so many unknowns. Even though you might get this information, they still are working towards, for the last few years, they've passed a budget. It has to be a balanced budget. And then they got more money because those other bodies finally did their job and got their budget. So it wasn't as big of a deficit as they thought. But they can't count on that because they have to have a balanced budget. And I think this is an easy target because even they talked about, and you'll see this if you look at the documents, closing Trapper Creek was one of the sectors. Even Glacier View is on. That doesn't save that much money because you still have those buildings. The buildings would go back to the borough, so really you're cost sifting because the borough would then get those buildings, and then somebody would still have to heat them and maintain them. So not really any savings there. So I think these are the targets that are the big targets that get to that $10 million the quickest without cutting programs and a bunch of other things. So really, this is the same situation that we have the state in. Big hole, but they need people not to say don't do it as much as they need people to say do this instead.
Right.
And that's really where people should be coming from on this. The facts are the facts. This is what the deficit is. They feel that they're being as transparent as they can. But they really need suggestions on how do we do it. It was last testifier last night was a woman who came up and was very nice. And she said, I'm a homeschool parent, and I can't talk to other parents, and people are going to think I'm crazy. But you know what? I have money left at the end of the year. I'd be happy to give that back to the district to fill the hole. I don't know how many homeschool parents would say that, but, here was somebody who was doing exactly what they are asking for, and that's people to step in and say, you don't like this scenario, come up with another one.
Right. So that pretty much summed up that meeting, or is
that pretty much it. It was, Yeah, I encourage people to listen to it. I think there was a lot of good information in it. And they did talk about the budget open houses, Mike, that they're going to have.
Right.
They're going to start having those in February, and those dates are now on the website. I think they're going to have two or three of them get out to the community. Another opportunity for people to go out and talk to them. And then there's also an opportunity, which I was sort of had my fingerprints on, and they're trying a new thing this year so that people don't even have to leave their room, and they're going to participate. Gene Stone and Luke Falp are going to participate in a teletown hall that AARP is going to sponsor.
Great.
January 26th. I think we've talked about streaming it, Mike.
Yes.
So people, it's kind of like a call-in talk show. You'll be able to listen to a presentation over the phone virtually, and then be able to call in and ask your questions. It'll be Facebook Lived, and also stored in a people will be able to tune into it later if they can't. But this is a way, if they register early, people will get a phone call asking them, telling them the Teletown Hall is now on the air, and they'll be able to listen in. They don't have to talk, just like people showed up last night and were in the audience and didn't speak. Or they can. You have that option with the Teletown Hall. So I'm glad to see them taking this step, really trying to get out in the community and talk to not only members of AARP, but anybody in the community can participate. And it's a new way in this virtual world that we live in, Mike, to try to reach and get some good feedback from people to how they solve these big problems they have right now.
Okay, so one other thing somewhat different that popped up, you may well be aware, Bill Gamble resigned.
Yeah, I did. That very sorry to see that. I don't think I haven't heard any scuttlebutt about it being other than what has been publicized, that he's decided he wants to go in business, private business with his family. But, yeah, that's going to be a really tough one to backfill. He's 27 years, I think he's been part of that department. Took over a year or so ago from someone who'd been there a very long time. I have not heard yet, and I haven't really scooped it out yet, but if they're going to, you know, have an interim until they hire somebody else, or are they going to promote, what the story is. But that's a big job, and it's going to take big shoes to fill Bill Gamble's shoes.
Right, and he was very impressive in stepping up and speaking at the assembly meetings, and as best I could tell, he was doing a good job, and he had been in it for just 2 years. But as was pointed out in the article, he had been an air traffic controller while being a volunteer fire chief, and had been involved in both the Miller's Reach and more recently the Sockeye fires, just as examples of things. But he's running the show. It's a big task, and I can understand after many years, you'd say, okay, it's time to move on. But at this point, it looks to be a loss until that position is filled properly.
Yeah, it's going to be a big loss for sure. He's built up quite the fire department in the Big Lake area. He's very respected out there, but I don't think he's going anywhere. He'll probably, have a new adventure, and I'm sure he'll stay engaged. At least I hope he does.
Okay. Well, with that, I want to thank you, Citizen Lobbyist, for calling in today, this 19th of January, and hopefully you'll be available for Valley Edition tomorrow.
Coming back tonight, Mike.
Okay.
Put a log on the fire and warm that place up.
All right. Drive carefully.
Right.
Bye-bye.
All righty.